Why do you lie so much and about the weirdest little things? My mother always asked me. I don't know, I always said. But I did know. It was very simple, because it was a better story.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you all the reviews and updates you need on whether you should actually read that Book Talk and Bookstagram famous book that you've seen everywhere. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin, and we also have a special guest today. Casey, do you want to introduce our guest?
I would love to. This is a good friend of mine from Sacramento, California. Well, she's not from Sacramento. She's from Ohio, which she's really proud of. But I met her in Sacramento. Sarah, do you have any words for the podcast today about what you like to read and how excited you are?
Yeah, I am very excited. I'm a huge fan of this podcast. So I'm so honored to be on it. I was bragging to all of my friends. And I feel like I read differently than all of you. I love like classic literature that has no plot. For example, I just read Cannery Row, as many Californians have corrected me, by John Steinbeck. And the like first sentence of the summary on Goodreads was Cannery Row does not have a plot, and I was like 5 out of 5 stars. This is the best book I've ever read. So yeah, and also yes, being Ohio is something to be proud of. I saw your face, Caitlin.
I mean, we all know how the Cotton Bowl turned out, so it's okay.
Sarah hates Ohio State, for those of you.
Okay, we'll allow them.
You can sit with us.
Nice.
But yeah, Sarah is a big fan of John Steinbeck.
Oh, I love Steinbeck.
Yeah, he's great.
And Catra in the Rye.
Oh, okay. No.
In my defense, I read it when I was like 17 and I was really identified with it. And I think if I read it now, I would hate it. And so I'm not going to reread it, and I'm just going to let it live in my memory.
I guess I can allow it.
With that, Caitlin, would you like to actually tell our viewers what we're reading and discussing today?
Well, speaking of books with no plot, we are reviewing Bunny today by Mona Awad, I believe. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry if I butchered that last name. Casey has been begging us to do this since spooky season, and has finally just said we are doing it, and here we are. I literally don't know how to. I got to the end of this book and said I don't know what this was about. So it's about some like graduate students at a college in the Northeast. They're literature students. There's maybe a cult involved. These girls that call themselves the Bunnies, and quite frankly I didn't know what was supposed to be real or not real, which was part of the point, but not enough for me to summarize what the book was about.
If you want a genre, it's like literature contemporary horror.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know, Sarah, do you feel like you can describe the book any better?
No, I mean, I think, like, you don't really know what's happening, but that's kind of the point of it.
Yeah. The general idea is it follows a master's creative writing program at an elite university, and there's like 5 or 6 women total. But anyway, I think five. Yeah, mm-hmm. There's like virtually no way to explain the plot, as Caitlin said, because... Yeah. You know, it's vibes. do you guys have your reviews?
Yeah. I would just like to offer a disclaimer first. Fiona Murray, if you're listening, I trusted you.
I have
lost my trust.
Another busy girl star. I got my mom to read this book. She rated the book 4 stars. I want known for everyone. And she has been dying for us to review it because there's just so much to discuss because it's so crazy. And my book is probably not someone you would think would really like this book. So
I'm honestly surprised she liked this book, just judging by her reading patterns. But she's a very deep person, so I get it.
Yeah.
Our smut queen let me down.
Yeah, but she did let me down.
Also, former Busy Girl Pod star Srishti, also I convinced to read the book, and they loved it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Srishti's smarter than me, so.
Yeah, Srishti's a lot smarter than me. They are amazing.
Sarah, I think we've just been upgraded to, like, intellectuals, because we're
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. I have three very short reviews in typical KC fashion, because honestly, I had a momentary lapse of sanity when I was going to finish this book and was reading through reviews. I was just sitting on my couch, like, cackling, texting Catherine. I will say I could not find a review that perfectly summarized what the book was about, because I think nobody who liked this book actually knows what it was about. This is a 1-star review. It says, TikTok sensation, should have given it away, but honestly, what a fucking dreadful book. A 2-star review. Overall, the author and main character are more obsessed with their own superiority rather than telling an interesting and coherent story. And then my favorite one that my sister picked out, 1.75 stars. Felt like one long episode of Riverdale.
Oh my God!
Okay, I've never seen Riverdale, but that feels so wrong to me.
No, that is...
Actually, no, it's so freaking right. It's so
accurate.
It's so accurate. The later seasons of Riverdale, that's what this is.
Not the first seasons, the later seasons.
Yeah, I said the later seasons.
I could see that 100%. Like a more college level Riverdale, not a teen show.
I don't know. Is Riverdale a teen show anymore? I don't know. Anyway.
Marketed as. I also went in Casey fashion and have 3 reviews because I thought these reviews were just funny. And I thought this one actually pretty much encompassed what I thought immediately after reading the book. It's a 1-star review and it says, my pea-sized brain cannot comprehend this abstract nonsense. I felt like my brain was small. Like I just was like, I finished the book and I text Caitlin. I was like, I finished it. I don't get it.
Yep.
This one I think is gonna, I only chose this because I thought it was gonna piss off Casey. 1-star review that says,
the like reason I choose half my reviews.
Yes. It's a 1-star review that says, like the secret history, but less fun and not interesting at all.
Oh, that's so crazy to me, because the secret history is the most boring book I've ever read. That is,
I mean,
so offensive.
100% agree with you there, but I thought it was funny because it directly conflicts with you.
I wouldn't say this one's more boring than Secret History, but
no, I will give the book its props on this one.
But that's about all I'll give it. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Well, haters obviously in the building, but I have 2 reviews. Also, I do want to say the reviews for this book are bangers, and it does not matter if it's a 1-star or a 5-star review. They're all insane. And so they were so much fun to read. So I have a 1-star and I also have a 5-star. My 1-star was, I want to be the person who likes weird books, but I don't think I'm the person who likes weird books.
Vibe.
And then my 5-star, Bunny is just so very, you know, so oh very. I don't even know how to put the jumble of fragmented what the fucks and huzz tumbling out of my brain into a coherent review, so I won't even try. I'll just say this is the most confusingly, fascinatingly unique labyrinth of a novel I've ever read. And while I have no idea what was real and what wasn't, or even what the real purpose was, I enjoyed the fuck out of reading it.
I literally texted Catherine. I was like, the only people who like this book have nothing they can say about it. Just like the bunnies when they review work in their literature circle. It's the same thing. You're all.
That is not true at all.
Okay, I think I'm really just said it's so you. Very. Yeah, you literally just read that.
You can be at a loss for words and have like an actual thought as well. Like
she used the bunnies words for the anyway. Go
she
on.
Said, confusing, fascinating, unique, labyrinth. That's a reason to like a book.
The body, space.
Oh my God, we're gonna fight, aren't we?
I feel like I just missed it. Wait, what are you talking about? The body space?
It's what the bunnies. Book. Yeah, that's what the bunnies like when they're reviewing like each other's like, oh my God, the body. And you're just like,
for a moment.
Work. The work was just, yeah.
Okay, whatever. Well, we're gonna get into why I love the book. And
I brought a review too. You
know, yay!
Yeah, what the heck, Casey? Course,
Sarah.
I just wanted to
cut her off. I was just gonna say I have real thoughts. So
it's just a short one. It's 2 stars. And it's Mean Girls but Add Acid. And I thought that was really accurate and also very funny.
That is the most accurate
one that was like Secret History meets Frankenstein meets Heathers. And I was like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of things that I've seen as have been like Heathers plus Jennifer's Body made into movies.
Yes. Well, I think that was an amazing review, Sarah. That was the best one.
Thank you.
Okay. This book, though, probably is our lowest review book.
Thank you for acknowledging that.
The Amazon review is 3.8 out of 5, and the Barnes & Noble review is, the Goodreads review is 3.5 out of 5, but the haters in the building also put the Barnes & Noble review because it's hella low, and it's 2.8 out of 5.
I put it in there because when I look on my computer, those are the top three that show up in the search history, and I thought that was crazy because I've never seen a Barnes & Noble review that low.
It's because the normal people shop at Barnes & Noble and the really smart people are on Goodreads. That's why the difference.
I can see that.
But I feel like normally Amazon is also normal.
Yeah, that one threw me for a loop that it's the higher rated one. But
well, I find Amazon because there's more people buying from Amazon. There's like, it spreads it out a lot more.
And so it like always prompts you to review too.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now it's time to do our star ratings. Do y'all want to start high or low?
That's up to you.
You know what? Let Catherine and I go first, and then the people who understood the book can go. 1 star. If I'm sorry, I need a plot. I'm the action girly. I told you, and there was action, but I didn't actually know what the action was. I need a plot. I need structure. I need a resolution. The writing was interesting, but I thought some of the writing was also gratuitous. I would not recommend. Sorry. 1 star from me. Not my genre. I understand people might like it. Not me.
Yeah, I'm also 1 star. I didn't get it. Like, I ended the book and just texted and said, what? Like, I tried to explain it to my mom, the book, and I couldn't explain it. And there were sentences that I felt were out of place almost, where when it was describing things, and I can read them even later on because I wrote them down because I was like, what is this sentence and why are we, like, it just felt like just shock value for pure shock value, and I don't totally love that in a book, is when you're like writing sentences to just shock people with no real meaning behind them. I can see why people would be interested in it if they like the horror genre or if they like the weird, twisted, and not totally understanding of it. So I'll give it that, but I hate most horror books. I didn't like the Heathers, and I actually don't like most horror movies, so I was off to a bad start. I was the one who lowest rated Tender as the Flesh, and that's the most equivalent I can give to this book. And so it was already off to a poor start for me. So sorry.
Okay. Well, this is going to be our most polarizing episode because I give this book 5 stars. I want to put my stake in the ground and say the core reason I loved this book so much is because every horror book has a main driver for the horror. In a lot of books, it's like, fear of the unknown or fear of outsiders or, fear of isolation. These are all kind of like really common drivers for horror, and this book took the desire to be loved and made it a driver for a horror novel. And I absolutely loved flipping just the complete, utter desire to be seen and loved and appreciated to this like acid trip horror novel. I think it completely accurately captured the culture of love that women experience, which is like, if you cannot find like this perfect person or this perfect thing, then you create this like obscene fantasy that really makes no sense and is like super, like, we can get into more in the non-spoiler section because you can't even discuss this book, but I feel like this book is like such a good picture of like the absolute batshit crazy insane pressure women feel to be loved and to be lovable and the things that they do in order to make themselves that way. Because and to fit in, and the way women try to win the approval of other women as well as the like love of men. I thought it was so good. That's why I loved the book. So I don't know if that's a concrete enough reason, Caitlin, but Sarah, I'll give the floor to you now.
No pressure, Sarah. This makes or breaks, whether we like you or not.
No, that's not true.
Not
Caitlin.
For me. I like you no matter what. I've already.
Not I'm just for
kidding.
Me either.
I'm kidding.
Well, I also give this book a 5 stars. I personally love horror. I love horror movies in particular. And I really love media. I feel like I normally experience with this experience this with movies, but like where you just kind of like sit back and watch it and not even like really try and follow a plot, you're just like consuming it. And this was the first time that I had experienced a book like that, and I thought that was really interesting and really amazing writing. Like I love, I don't really know if this is a spoiler or not, but like at a certain point there's the characters called bunnies, and you at a certain point you lose track of which bunny is which bunny. And I think that's brilliant. And so I just like, I love that aspect of it. And I love things that warrant a discussion. Like, I think even if we are going to fight, it's going to be super interesting. And there's so many things that you can take away from it. And also I really loved, because I went to a really like floofy liberal arts school in Ohio, where there were a lot of really wealthy people who went there. And also like non-wealthy people who went there, and I could really relate to her academic experience and like the dynamics between the bunnies and Sam, the main character. And it was really exaggerated, but in all the best ways. And I think this is a perfect book, actually.
Thank you, Sarah.
You're welcome.
I will say, if I liked the things you said you liked, I would probably like this book. Because I honestly, sure. I'm more intrigued by your review of the book than Casey's, because you're like talking about like, oh yeah, horror and the genre and the fancy liberal arts school and stuff like that. Like, if I liked all those things or experienced all those things, I probably would find more with this book that I could relate to. But because I had nothing to relate to, I find it very hard for me to read books I have no relation to.
I also appreciate that you're fair. Like, can't wait to discuss and learn some things. And Casey's like, put on the boxing gloves, let's go.
Yeah.
No, I'm curious too, but I'm definitely going to fight.
I'm also curious, but you're going to hate me.
I'm not going to hate you. We've disagreed before. And we'll disagree again.
I'd also like to point out, I'm the only one of the three of us who finished The Secret History. Please let that win.
I also finished it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. This is good to know.
Mm-hmm. I also really, really didn't like it. So.
It wasn't good.
It was not good.
At least I knew what was happening.
Yeah. On a side, I also read the Goldfinch and also really hated that.
Did you read that one? Someone read that one.
My mom did.
Oh, your mom did.
And she basically said, way too long, but I enjoyed the story of, like, if the plot was, like, 300 to 500 pages shorter, it'd be great.
That's actually also what my mom said about it. Okay, well, let's actually get into our proper discussion questions. The first one, gonna be hard to answer, more plot or character driven.
No.
Who the fuck knows?
Character. It's character.
Yeah, it's for sure character. Because yeah. No matter how you interpret this book, Samantha's not okay.
Yeah.
No.
No, she's absolutely not okay.
That's a good way to put it.
Samantha needs psychiatric help.
Okay. Yes. Have you read other books by the author? I have not. I know she just released a new one.
So it's just a new one, or is there how many? Just Bunny and one other?
I'm actually not sure.
She has at least three, but I haven't read any of them.
Yeah, okay. So she also, Rouge is her new one, and then she has two others?
Yeah, I saw in the back of the book, mine gave me a preview of 13 Ways of Looking at a Fat Girl.
Yes.
That's a provocative title.
I was honestly more interested. But I will not be reading another one. I'm sorry. I am not a horror girly. Yeah. Not for me.
Yeah. See, me and Sarah are the horror lovers. Maybe that's the real difference. Okay. I have not, but I would. I'm guessing we already know how everyone else is going to answer.
Play.
Okay. How is the pacing of the book? The book is pretty short.
If you can get through it, it's really fast.
Yeah.
It feels like a fever dream reading it, which is part of the point. But so like you can kind of just blow through it if you want. I read it in 2 days, mostly because I wanted to get back to my regularly scheduled programming of Crescent City 3. But I think it's well paced for what it is.
Yeah. I think I technically read it in 3 days, but full disclosure, I got the Kindle book and I used an Audible credit so I could listen to it while at work, which was a fucking mistake. Don't do that. And I listened to it on 3x speed because I needed to get through it for this podcast. Because it, like, I feel like I would have enjoyed this book a lot more if I had time to read it. But I had a deadline.
Okay. Well, I do want to push back on that because you read 800 page books. And so I don't think it's a deadline. I think you just didn't like it.
Fair enough. You're right. I was trying to give you guys some like a bone, but I'll take the bone away.
Yeah, I don't need a bone. So I loved the pacing. There's like, it's short. I don't remember. It's like somewhere between like 250 and 300 pages or something like that.
Mine said 301.
Okay. 300 pages. And I thought there were like several different parts of the book. Like the story does evolve, even if it's not like in the traditional plot sense. Like there are sort of variations in like what the focus is. And I really liked like all the different like portions.
Yeah, I think the pacing is honestly one of the most interesting things about the book and her writing. So I thought it really like ebbed and flowed in all the right spots, I felt like. I also listened to it and I don't really remember how long it took me, but I usually inhale audiobooks, so it was probably like 2 days or something.
Okay. Yeah.
It's short.
Yeah. Now I get to give it a busy girl rating.
Okay, actually, if you like horror and are, I don't know, not me, I'll give you a solid 3. I'm not going to recommend it personally, but I understand there are people that like it, and I think it is a quick-paced book, easy to fit in your schedule. There are some good stopping points with the three sections. Like, I'll give it a busy girl's 3.
Yeah. I want to agree with the 3 for horror people, maybe even a 4. I just, I don't know if it's easy to pick back up and put down. Like, it's like such a fever dream that getting back into it might be harder. I don't know.
Personally, I felt like it was very easy to pick up and put down just because there's always something memorable happening. But I mean, I do think that you kind of like, I would argue it's like probably a better experience if you let the fever dreamness of it like ruminate a little more. So like probably not like, but it's only 300 pages. So it's like, how many times can you pick it up and put it back down? But I mean, I'm kind of similar to you guys. I feel like this is one of those books that's almost impossible to not caveat when you give it a busy girl rating. Like, I think if you like horror, I think it's a 5. It's short, it's really good, and it serves horror. If you don't like horror, I mean, it's a horror book. Like, it's hard to like recommend it to someone. You know, horror is like a very what's the word I'm looking for? Divisive genre.
Yeah, you're probably not going to convert a non-horror fan to be a horror fan, where like you could probably sway someone into fantasy or romance or whatever.
Exactly. Like, you either like it or you don't. And so it's kind of like a 5 or a 0, which is funny because our ratings are a 5 and a 1.
I honestly really disagree. I think I could convert someone to being a horror fan if I really tried.
I like your attitude.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge fan of romance, and I think it'd be really hard for someone to convince me to be a fan of romance. But I don't know. I agree with all of you. It's like a very hard book to rate just because there are a lot of like footnotes. You know, it's like, it's really great, but there's like, you know, this thing. I feel like a 3 or 4 is a good busy girl rating. Again, if you like horror. So
okay. Well, now we're to our spoiler alert section, which normally I need to like spell this out for everyone who is listening. Normally Catherine puts together a whole list of discussion questions, and today our only discussion question is why.
To be fair, she joked about doing that, and I said, I double dog dare you.
Yeah, I didn't need much convincing.
Look, we can talk about this book forever, I think, probably without any.
There are questions, they're just hidden in the comments.
Oh.
So I could not come up with discussion questions. Normally, when I follow like a plot book, it's very easy for me to formulate questions. So I took Penguin House. Penguin Random House is discussion questions. And then I was just kind of going to allow Casey to move us along because she's the person.
Guide us, Casey, book. A wise one.
I accept this torch like so readily. But I am going to refer to your questions that you still have. But the first thing I want to say is that I am surprised by the comment you made earlier about Sarah's reasoning and how you think you would like the book if you related to those things, because I feel like this book is a lot about like loneliness and being left out and the pressure to fit in. And I feel like those things are like very relatable to lots of people.
Exploding bunnies, however, isolate the reader.
I'm just saying, if Catherine's saying like, if I could relate to this, I would like the book more, I'm like, well, didn't you relate to that? Like, did you not? Like,
like I kind of said earlier, there were some parts of it were sentence structure wise. Like, I think Mona is a very good writer, but I felt like she would write sentences just for shock value. And I understand. Oh, yes.
Actually, Catherine, read your sentences.
Okay.
I know of at least one of them.
Yeah, I just only have one of them.
We were discussing whether to bill you for our therapy bills, Casey.
Yes.
I will not say, but...
I will say this right now. I am not a prude. I am fine with smut. I am fine with, like, very graphic details of any sort of sexual relations or stuff like that. But this almost felt like unnecessary graphic details.
Yes.
Gratuitous. Yes. And this book almost made me want to go back to my Tender is the Flesh rating and rate it higher, because I felt like Tender as the Flesh had more.
Here's the interesting thing too. I gave Tender as a Flesh as the Flesh like a 4, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So just if you want like to know where we stand on this book, go back, listen to Secret History, go back to listen to Tender as the Flesh, and you'll kind of see how weird it is where we're falling right now. I feel like,
yes, this is like there's a fault line here somewhere that I feel like we're still trying to like,
we're very spread on this type of book.
I was the most negative of both of those books. So I DNF'd Secret History and I gave Tender as a Flesh a 2.5. So I was already not on the gore train, but this one sentence made me jump out of my skin. And I was just like, this was unnecessary. I could picture Goldilocks and the Three Bears masturbating in this bed. And the context of that sentence was describing how comfortable a bed was. I was like, why?
That one was real. I was thinking about her friend's bed.
No, that was a real bed.
Yeah, that one was real.
But I was like, why? Excuse me.
So all of this to me like fits into the theme of absurdity, which is like a big part of the book is just like absurdity. And so that's why I loved the shock value and like the weird like sexualness of like some of the points where like the book is very sexual. It's because it's just like heightened to an extreme degree, and like the sentences and like all of those things being in it emphasize that. Sarah, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I just feel like you're in Samantha's head. And again, like I've said, she's not okay. And I think that like those comments that are supposed to have those shock values, or you're supposed to be like, why did she think that? Like, how did that go through her head? Like, no normal person would really have that thought. So I understand what you're saying, Catherine. And I think that I'm also giving this book a lot of grace because I love it so much, and that I wouldn't with other books. But
I will say something you said, Sarah. The one part of the book I liked was the part you mentioned about how they all like congeal into one bunny and you're not sure who's talking. That was the one part I was like actually semi-interested, because I was like, oh, this is culty. And like, that's kind of cool that like the author is combining them into a sentient blob. That was the point where I kind of understood the narrative. And then it went off the rails pretty soon after that. And so that's when it lost me again. So I actually did like when that happened, and like I don't know if allegory is the right word, or like something like talking about like girl groups and female relationships and stuff like that. I actually liked that part somewhat, but past that point, I lost it.
I will say I did. That was probably my favorite part. I'm not saying sororities are cults, but I was a member of a sorority. And to some extent, like, it's accepted that you're just going to be a fan of each other because you're all stuck together. So you want to root for people, and then you talk about them behind their back because that does happen. And so like that part I found, I don't know, like kind of fun and quirky, because it's like just a very extreme version of what most girls who join any sort of organization experience. I did enjoy the cleverness of that too, where as Samantha's getting closer and closer to being a bunny, she starts, instead of calling them their nicknames, every once in a while throwing in a real name mixed with the others' nicknames. And then on her way back out, she starts using their nicknames again slowly and mixing them in. And so I thought that was really clever writing about like how she was going, getting in and then getting out. But so I didn't mind that section. That's also my favorite section. I agree with Catherine though, it lost me after that. I just didn't know what was happening.
Yeah. So I think it might be helpful to like at least walk us all through some of like the general plot points. So like the beginning, we arrive, Samantha's the main character. To our knowledge, she has one friend who is this like weird ethereal woman. Obviously this woman ends up being totally made up. I want to start by asking, did you guys know she was going to be made up? Did you catch on to something weird about this friend? Like, what did you think of her?
Everything I thought maybe the direction it was going, it did not. I knew there was something weird. At one point, I thought maybe she was a bunny, like one of the darlings or something somehow, which is not what it was, but...
I mean, that's kind of close.
Close. But then I got confused again and lost that train of thought because I was like, wait, how'd she get her out of this cult? She must be real. And then she actually, I don't know. I liked the little plot twist. I didn't understand it.
Yeah. I was actually closer than I thought I was. I thought she was a ghost, which was just a weird, like, normal romance novel kind of thought that I had. And then I thought that she was an ex-bunny that was trying to protect her from the bunnies. And then none of that turned out to be true. And I was, oh, okay. Semi-imaginary friend bird. Huh.
That's where it lost me. The swan. That's where it lost me. If you had just said imaginary friend, I'd be like, yes. But the dead swan is where you lost, where I was like, okay.
I feel like this book is so hard to discuss because, like, first you have to debate, like where you think Samantha's mental state is. Mm-hmm. Because, like, it's easiest to just be like, oh, this woman is, like, very schizophrenic. Like, she needs help. But I personally think that's a lazy way of looking at it. And I like to choose to not believe that and believe like these things are real. And I think she is like going, like slipping into insanity. But in terms of Ava, I feel like she was real for half of the book and then was made up. Like, I think, because when they had met in the diner, I think she was real then, like, because then Samantha like was kind of starting to slip back into reality a little bit. And then the bunnies came because Ava was like, I'm leaving. And I think she actually left and then never came back. And then the rest of the book is Samantha just making her up, or like she turned a swan into Ava or whatever it is.
So I agree with you. I believe that like all of the turning animals into things in this book is like intended to be interpreted as reality. But then it's like, Samantha's interpretation of like every event is like so deeply questionable that it's hard to know what's going on. With the friend, I actually interpreted her as being a what do they call it? The darlings. I interpreted her as being like Samantha's own like friendship darling the whole time. But I agree with you, like her character feels so much more solid in the first half of the book, and like slowly it feels like the edges of her character kind of deteriorate, and like she becomes more and more described in these like swan-like terms. So I actually see what you're saying, and I didn't think of that initially. I was just like, I think that she was just sort of Samantha's imagination the whole time. And the reason that I think that and would still argue that is because I don't know what relationship you could have where someone would just go and not ever come back. But it's also like Samantha is such an unreliable narrator that you can never really know.
I will say, to counter that, at the end of the book, which granted, this information is coming from the bunnies, so you can't be totally sure if it's real or not. They do say you were always hanging around with that bird that you were talking to. So they kind of make it seem like Ava was always a bird or always was an imaginary friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, there also is that theory, I guess, which this is kind of like contradicts what I just said, but one of the reasons why the bunnies wanted to get Samantha into their smut salon was that they had seen Samantha turn the swan into Ava, and they're like, oh, we have been failing at turning bunnies into men, so maybe if we get Samantha in here, she can teach us how to do it. So
That makes way more sense.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which this is not my big brain. This is Reddit's big brain. This was not me.
You know, if you just put it that way, like more bluntly in the book, I probably would have liked it better.
Yeah.
Which, that changes a lot.
Yeah.
This is why I like the book, is because like I agree with that, but I also don't agree with it.
And okay,
the conversation will never end, and I love it.
Yeah, I love that you never know.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. So
I need to know some things.
Okay, so from there, those are sort of the earliest characters, are Samantha and her eventual swan friend. And then we're kind of introduced to the bunnies, who are sort of the epitome of like hyper-femininity, toxic femininity, like no individuality whatsoever. And there's sort of this description of how they kind of like there's one girl who's like kind of the head girl, and she's like sucked everyone into her orbit, and she kind of makes the rules.
I want to say something. I do disagree actually about the lack of individuality, because there are several points where their different kinds of styles are described and their different tastes in men are described. And I think, yes, they become a hive mind, but their differences are actually important to an extent to the creation of the darlings.
Okay, but I agree with you. And that's one of the reasons I loved it so much, is that I think it shows intentionally the why conformity doesn't ever actually work, because you can't ever actually like make people be the same, and like women aren't actually like cupcakes, and so like they all felt this pressure to like obey the head girl and be like her, but that did not erase their individuality.
Yeah, I absolutely loved the parts where Samantha would note of like, oh, she actually spoke in a deeper voice, like this is her real voice.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was brilliant and a good example of what you're just talking about, Casey.
Yeah, the combat boots, or her taste in like dark brooding men, like there were some differences. Also, one of them seemed nicer than the others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that I didn't fully understand, and maybe this just like kind of plays into the hyper femininity of it, of like women shouldn't eat, but I didn't fully, not shouldn't eat, but like shouldn't eat a lot, is that they like always ate like the tiny foods.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the pink berry. I was like, isn't pink berry Froyo? Like, did they have something against Froyo?
No, they were pro Froyo, right?
Right. But does the author have something against Froyo? I don't know.
Oh. Well, I will say, okay, I grew up in a very white, rich, very affluent area. And I will say, after school, the girls definitely went to Froyo and to Pinkberry. So
what?
That is a thing in affluent areas.
Not a thing in the affluent areas where I'm at. We don't even have a Pinkberry, but
anyway, Catherine, I was actually also going to say that there's a neighborhood in Dallas that I was like, I didn't even question that scene, Sarah. I mean, I think you're smart to point it out, because now that you say something, I'm like, I don't know. I didn't even really think about that, but I didn't question it because it just seemed like normal rich girl behavior. I was like, yeah, isn't that what they do?
I mean,
Mini things in Froyo.
Yeah. Eat mini things. It's almost like a discussion on counting calories and counting carbs, because if it's mini, it's totally fine. Because I definitely heard a conversation in high school of a girl being like, if I eat a mini hamburger slider, then it's not actually calories.
Yes.
I can't help it that the people who went to your school are stupid.
Oh yeah, they're very dumb.
Yeah, I guess maybe where my, I don't know, like lack of understanding or confusion comes from is because like I grew up in a very small town in Ohio, like less than 3,000 people, where it was mainly like an agriculture town. The closest Froyo we had was like an hour away. And it's not like most of the people who live in my town, like were lower middle class. And then going to like a really rich private school, and especially seeing the sororities, and I wasn't personally involved in one of them. Like there were a lot of things where I was like, this is so new to me. So yeah, maybe I just don't understand that culture.
I mean, yeah. Even in a sorority, I was like, I don't feel like that connected all the way, but there were definitely some people that, not specifically even in my sorority, but at Mizzou in general, that were from the other side of the country, but came to the J school because their rich daddy paid for them to, and just like different expectations people had and like the things they afforded, but also they talked about how they hadn't talked to their parents in a month, you know, like, I don't know. So there was some things, but, and I understand this is like everything in this book is, what's the word?
Blown up.
Well, yeah, I was trying to make it more sophisticated.
Melodramatic.
Yeah. No, I lost the word I was going for. But I understand everything is taken to the extreme. I didn't connect all the way on that. I agree a little bit. It just seemed a little like, oh, especially with like all the poor around in the town.
Okay, that was something that was crazy, was the violence of the town. That is one thing that I'm still...
Do you want
like
to hear my theory?
Yes, of course.
And I actually think I might have, if you are confused, I might have got you on this one. They let all their broken creations go.
That was my theory, too.
Oh my gosh, that's so smart.
Yeah.
Oh, the crime has suddenly gotten really bad around here. Weird. Who's releasing unhinged, half-formed men on the town?
Oh my god, you're so fucking right. I no. can't believe I didn't.
And I was hoping
that
it was gonna turn into like, oh my god, I found out all these men are just like chopping people's heads off. I have to like, I thought that's where the plot was going.
Yes,
not
the whole time. I thought the bunnies were gonna like the darlings, not the girl bunnies, were gonna like come back, and there was gonna be sort of some sort of like weird reckoning.
No, I assumed they were the ones like beheading people. They're creatures who sometimes wandered back, you know.
So the violence is another thing that I actually was like, I'm not sure this is really happening. Like I was like, I could not decide when I was reading the book if Samantha was just making it up or not. Like that's one of those things where I was like, is this really happening? Like I just couldn't decide if it was really happening.
My thought was it was really happening, and that would add to her nerves and her nervous breakdown. And yeah. My guess was it was all these half-formed man creatures.
Well, and she seemed to be living in a pretty impoverished area next to a very creepy man in her normal apartment. And I will say, it kind of reminded me of Ninth House. And
yes, actually, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, because Yale's like this really idyllic campus full of rich, affluent people. And then you get to New Haven and it's a dump. And it's just crime and drugs. And that's not totally untrue to the actual situation of New Haven, Connecticut. So that's what it kind of reminded me of when I was reading it, where I was like, okay, Ivy League school in a very decrepit town because it's stealing all of its tax base.
I do feel like it's true to a lot of college towns to an extent, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like initially that's what I just kind of assumed it was. Mona was trying to highlight was like the difference between, you know, like the Ivy Leagues and like the town that it's in and everything. It reminded me of, did you guys ever have to read that short story? It's called like The Party of the Hour or something like that.
No.
Okay, never mind. Just disregard that then.
Okay. Well, we've already touched on this a little bit, but I want to ask the question before we move on. One of the things that I thought was really relatable in the book was sort of Samantha feeling like she doesn't perform girlness well enough, and sort of like the whole like hyper feminine thing with the bunnies is they like perform girlhood in this specific way. But Ava and Samantha also perform for each other, despite the fact that Ava is, at least to some degree, a figment of Samantha's imagination. So I wanted to kind of ask you guys, did you think that their relationship was also toxic in an equal way? How did you compare their friendship to Samantha's relationships with the bunnies?
Definitely not equal toxicity. I mean, one was like a drugging cult where they're wearing cupcake dog dresses and teasing their hair to where it's nodding and breaking into their heads. Yeah, I mean, like, Samantha was just so lonely and so out of it that she was just wanting to find community anywhere. But I feel like Ava allowed her to be a little more of herself than, you know, the bunnies, who were complete antithesis of her.
I sort of think Samantha could not be a dominant alpha personality in any capacity and needed someone to tell her what to do. Mm-hmm. I think that's why she invented Ava, because she just was indecisive and needed someone to kind of speak for her, defend her. And, you know, for a while, she was quite happy with the bunnies briefly because there was someone to tell her what to do and she was included. And I think it actually wasn't too different from Ava, just different types of people.
I feel like Ava, in some ways, really encouraged Samantha to be in the depths of her mind, which, as we know after having read Bunny, was not necessarily a good thing. I do think Ava was a good friend to Samantha in a lot of ways, but I think she encouraged her isolation from everyone else, which is not a good thing. Whereas I feel like the bunnies, in their own weird way, encouraged her to talk to more people, I guess, even if it was just them. And also, Ava really hated the bunnies as well, which, I mean, Samantha already did anyway, but just kind of like building on that hate too.
Yeah, no, I really, really like that point. I loved Samantha and Ava's friendships, and I also just really loved Ava as a character. And I really liked the ending kind of because of her. But I agree with you. There were times when, like, also Ava encouraged Samantha to be so mean and closed off to the bunnies, to the point where I was like, I'm not sure why that would be like healthy or respectful. Like, you cannot like people, or you can like, you know, some people who are in a tight friend group and not others. And I felt like Ava was almost just like the complete foil, to the extent that she was like, the bunnies were about this extreme positivity and acceptance, and Ava was about the complete opposite, like extreme avoidance of like any sense of like conformity and getting along, which you do need to like be friends and be in society in some capacity.
Did you expect the most sane and realistic relationship to be Jonah in the end? God, I love that dumb idiot.
No, also the whole time I was waiting for Jonah to like turn into a psychopath or something. I was like, does Jonah just get to
I know
normal?
I was like, he was just a cracked out poet.
I'm highly offended with your term of crazy idiot.
He was my favorite. I love Jonah,
and I thought from the very beginning, like, I'm like, this man's gonna be the stable one, like, and I thought it was highly ironic that it's like this addict, a recovering addict, and he's gonna be the stable one in the novel. Like, I thought that was a brilliant, especially like, I don't know if this was like her intention, but like, just in society today, it's like addiction is still like highly criminalized and stigmatized, and just to have this character where like he struggles with addiction and he's actually like one of the best characters. Best is unstable. I thought was really interesting.
The bar is low in this book, but yes, yeah. He is the best.
I loved when he was just like, I can get you drugs, but I'm not going to take the drugs, but I'm going to help you out. Like, I can give you the non-bad drugs. And then he was just like, because I did like in the end where the last like few pages where they meet up again and he is being judged by the poet group while she's being judged by the creative writing group. So they're both these two outcasts finding each other. I was confused by the abruptness of the ending, but I did appreciate that kind of like, he's being judged by his own group, she's the out of her group, that kind of thing. I I mean, he was just like a lovable idiot where he was just like, okay, I'm like
he
a
was
golden
just
retriever.
Happy to be there.
Yeah, he's a golden retriever.
He's just vibing.
He's a poet.
He said, like, I would be dead if I wasn't here. So he's just genuinely happy to be there.
Yeah.
He's very rose-colored glasses, man.
If we're talking about characters, I really want to talk about the lion.
Yes. Okay. I was just about to bring him up because I was like, we should devote this now to like side characters who are like side plots that don't totally ever come together with like the main through line.
Well,
so
the lion.
Take it away. What's your thought on the lion?
Nothing like cohesive, truly. I don't know. Actually, when I talked about this book with Saoirse, mm-hmm. they had felt it was like a representation of a lot of male-female relationships, and not a lot, but like the toxic ones of like they get close, something happens, and then they just like abandon them. Of like, and particularly in this, like the lion probably saw how insane Samantha was, and instead of like offering help that she clearly needed and like being her professor and advisor, instead of like whatever it was they were, and like actually, sorry, I feel like this doesn't make any sense, but like actually like being there for her in a professional way instead of in the way that the relationship had gone to, which is no one really knows what that was.
I kind of interpreted it as he was like, you know, they were friends or whatever they were, until that night she got drunk and word vomited everything. And she talks about that. But then, and you're kind of angry on her behalf until you get to the end and realize she probably said some crazy stuff. And he was probably like, oh, I don't know what to do with that. And you're right.
Yeah,
like, he should have,
like,
a good person would help her. But you then understood why he isolated her, because he was like, whoa, that is a lot. But it's not nice, still.
Yeah, I don't think, like, his actions were excusable at all. Like, no matter what you interpreted from the word vomit, like, he should
understandable, not excusable.
Okay.
Because it also does definitely, like, you can definitely sense that they had a more of a friendship than a professional relationship. And so that was definitely always part of the issue, was, like, not just how the relationship ended, even though that's what really bothered Samantha, but, like, their relationship had clearly progressed to a place that was like not professional. And that's mm-hmm. part of why the fallout was so devastating for her.
Well, especially because like there's this power dynamic there, because he is her thesis advisor and is a higher up in the creative writing like program. Mm-hmm. So she has to report to him in order to graduate. And he is basically just avoiding her, except for to come every once in a while to say, hey, where's your writing at? And she's just like, I don't have it. And he's like, well, I'm concerned. Text me your writing, or like email me your writing. It's like, no, that should be, the onus is on you to get that, to like encourage your students to go forward. It's not up to her to text you or email you. So yeah, I mean, like, boundaries were obviously crossed in that situation. And unfortunately, that's like a situation that happens where the power dynamics are really fucked, and in society, mm-hmm. and women are put blame on for the situations, despite very gross.
And the fact that he wasn't that much older, so it makes the line even more gray mm-hmm. on what is appropriate. But you're right. I think it's kind of a realistic.
Yeah,
I feel like that's an experience people have.
Yeah. And I do wonder, I spent a lot of time thinking about him when I read this book, actually, because he's sort of in the background, but also his influence on Samantha. Like, I really believe that, like, their relationship had a huge impact in her, like, clearly, like, spiraling, which is sort of a weird impression to have based on how little he's in the book. But that's just really how I felt. Like, it felt like their fallout was like so monumental to her in her mind.
I think it was, because no one who was real cared about her.
Yeah. And it was like, it just like served to like totally sever her like feeling of belonging in the program, which like then set the stage for like everything that happens with the bunnies. Okay. Well, if y'all think of any more side characters or side quest plots.
Oh, you forgot. Bosco.
Oh, I had totally forgotten about Fosco.
How could you forget Fosco?
Bro. Okay, well, what did y'all think about Fosco?
She is like the worst drama teacher ever kind of thing, where she's just like, we let the process happen. It's okay if you mutilate yourself. Just the process is happening. I'm like, that is the worst kind of liberal arts teacher I've ever fucking heard of, because that's never okay.
She seemed to she seemed to not mind Samantha's like work, like her writing when she was turning it in. I mean, she talks about how she kind of looks condescendingly at some of the bunnies and what they're saying. Not that she was ever encouraging to Samantha, but like, she was a weird character.
Yeah, it's also just like so hard to actually like interpret her, I think, in particular, just because you don't know what's like. Samantha's unreliable, so she's just you're just reading her interpretations of this professor, and maybe Samantha was like already feeling insecure because she's writing about all of these weird things and the bunnies aren't, and so maybe she's just like exaggerating in her head her actions and what they actually mean.
Say Fosco is better than the lion because she at least reaches out and invites her to Christmas? Or was that purely a pity invite?
I was definitely purely a pity invite. But sometimes I feel like, and in that case, I feel like the motivation doesn't necessarily matter, because she did it anyway and Samantha came. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question. I feel like, no, Casey, you go.
So, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I had zero thoughts.
I also had a really hard time interpreting Fosco for the same reasons, where I was like, you know, I've been in creative writing classes. It's a very vulnerable experience. You know, a lot of us took journalism classes as well, where you have to like publicly display something you've done and everyone gets to publicly critique it. And it's like a very vulnerable experience. And so I didn't know if Fosco was actually kind of a shit or if Samantha was just deeply insecure about having to portray her work specifically in front of colleagues she didn't feel really got her. I did, though. I think the only points in the book that made me like laugh were Fosco, because she's so deliberately ridiculous, like her like preaching about the process and doing the work and like blah 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 blah, and you know exactly the kind of person that she is. And so in that aspect I really liked her, but I don't think I ever totally made sense of like what I felt about her. But I don't think she's as bad as the lion, because I think that her relationship with Samantha was always very professional and there wasn't like a messed up power dynamic between them. I think she was just sort of like a weird and like possibly shitty teacher.
She enabled stuff instead of
being directly involved. She enabled for sure. Yeah.
Because I didn't know, because half of the book, I just didn't even know if it was real, but like, I don't know. Maybe I should ask this. Did y'all think that like the one bunny that carved eat me on her skin was actually a real carve eat me or fake? Because if that was real and Fosco was just like, it's just part of the process, I would have been like, call the ambulance. You have a duty as a teacher. When you see a student self-harming, you call for help.
I mean, I think like Casey said earlier, it's just the absurdity of it, you know?
That's how I interpreted it, is I was like, it's real. But like, that's the point in the book, like the point where the bunnies do that critique and they're all like obsessed with that darling who is like out to get them. That's the point in the book where things like totally devolve. Like there's almost like no sense of reality anymore, which I liked, but that's how I interpret it, is like at this point, it's like things are just insane, and like the absurdity of it is like just that a professor would see all of these absolute batshit insane things and just be like, yes, ladies, excellent work. And even Fosco critiques them for making their work too much about men.
I like
mm-hmm. the shade that some English majors are just too absurd. No, I'm just kidding.
Most English majors are too absurd.
I think it was a minor commentary on liberal arts.
Oh, yeah.
But
I'm sorry. Do you know how much bullshit liberal arts like excuses in the name of academia? Like,
right. I just don't want to shit on your English major because it is credible. But in this book, they are shitting on the English major.
Yes.
I will fight for a liberal arts education. But yeah. I do agree that like I also.
I mean, we all chose liberal arts, but.
Yeah, but Sarah has a liberal arts degree.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have any bunnies in your classes?
Oh my god. Yes. Like I in one of my writing classes in particular, there were a lot of bunnies. But luckily the professor was kind of on our side, the non-bunny side.
Etching their writing into crystal tablets.
Something like that, maybe.
Or their skin. Or bringing in boxes of weird things.
Yeah.
I still want to know what was in the last girl's box, okay?
Oh my god, me too. I can't believe they never reveal that, yeah.
Wait, I thought it would come back later to be something important.
No. Okay. So now, chronologically, we've met the bunnies. It's weird. We've met the teachers. There's stuff. Now Samantha eventually gets an invite to these smut salons. And we have no idea what's going to happen, but we show up and then I don't think y'all correct me if I'm wrong. I can't remember exactly. I don't think they get straight into the darling stuff,
No. But
the first time they just bring out all of these weird glassy eyed men who are like drugged.
Nope. Or something. There's no men at the first one.
What?
They just okay. talk
first
about
first one is
smut.
Just the My Little Pony in the cape and the cinnamon.
Yeah, rubbing the cinnamon stick.
Okay. Yeah, they get Samantha trashed.
Yeah.
And they all like choose reading like their favorite like sex scenes from like different stories, right?
They
stories
make her tell like, the story of her dying with the guy and she makes it sound like she loved him and like embellishes it. And then the next one, they bring her the darling that looks like this guy.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So there's one where they bring in the dudes and it's really weird. Mm-hmm. What did
Thursday
you
prom, didn't you know? Everybody does it in grad school.
Yeah. What did you guys think when their heads exploded?
Oh, it was before that I was creeped out.
What did I
when
text?
They started eating each other.
I texted Catherine. I said, I'm 32% in and someone's head exploded. And I don't even think that's a spoiler because I don't know why it happened.
You did say that. And I was confused.
So
yeah, I was like, 32% in and no one's head exploded yet. This is crazy.
Yeah, no, I was like, I don't think I'm spoiling anything for you because I don't know what's happening.
I was just like, they're eating their hair and then their corsages and then the head explodes.
Mm-hmm. So y'all are going to think I'm so weird. This is the scene where I knew I was going to love this book because it was so weird. I was like, oh, it's about to get freaking weird.
I will say I was interested.
Mm-hmm.
I just need a little more structured because my brain doesn't work the way that book was working.
Yes. No,
I needed why did this person's head explode?
Well, basically from here, these smut salons get increasingly weird and eventually they end up creating darlings. And Samantha has this huge rift in the group because she can't seem to really create a darling. Like hers, when she's leading the process, just don't really work. And she doesn't know why she can't get it to work. But what did you guys think of their sort of meetings and smut salons in general leading up to this point? And then what did you think about the fact that Samantha could not create a proper darling until the very... Well,
This was workshop, not smut salon, first of all.
Oh my God, whatever.
Workshop. The fact that she accidentally created Max out of a stag makes way more sense if we go with the theory that Ava was created from the swan. Other than that, I don't have a lot of thoughts.
Yeah. At this point of the book, I was like, cool.
Love the chaos Max brought, though.
The chaos Max brought was great.
Max gave me so much anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the point. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to gather my thoughts about this. Because clearly, like, Samantha, like, can't control when she makes the darlings. And I think, but I don't really understand why. And maybe it's just because, like, she created them when she was most in her, like, her own self, whereas, like, when she was trying to be a bunny, she wasn't really herself, and therefore she couldn't create one, because also during this time she wasn't writing either. And I feel like building a darling is basically just building a character, and she just, like, couldn't build the characters. I don't know if that made sense.
No, that triggered something, because in the smut salon, the Duchess says, "We don't lie here." And I think maybe this is a wrong connection of, because Samantha lies so much about her life and she's lying to herself almost, she can't create these concepts, because each of the darlings is very specific to each one of the bunnies, where it's their specific wants and desires, and they're completely plain about what their wants and desires are, despite them being trying to be like this cohesive hive mind. They're all different in their wants and desires, but Samantha's actively lying about her own wants and desires. So maybe that's why she can't create a bunny. And the Duchess even says, like, don't lie.
Yeah.
Or maybe Samantha's, like, too focused on trying to fit in with the bunnies rather than, like, focusing on her own desire. Like, her desire is to fit in and not to really create a darling.
Yeah. That's kind of how... Oh, you go, Caitlin?
No, you go, because I was going to say something totally left field.
Okay, save it then for our next question. I still agree. I don't totally feel sure about why Samantha couldn't create one, other than the reasons that you guys have already said. Like, she just doesn't. And even when she wanted to fit in with the bunnies so badly, she still deeply felt, like, wrong in the friendship and didn't feel like they understood her or even really liked her. Because she does end up creating quite the character in Max. So it's obvious that she can create, like, very real bunnies. Because all of the ones that she created were more real than the ones that the bunnies created. I want to say I did like the darling creation aspect of it, because I love the movie I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Okay.
I love that movie.
Yep. I love it too. In that movie, this is a spoiler if you haven't seen it. The main character, the premise is that he has a fantasy girl, but as the movie goes on, the girl keeps changing, and it sort of devolves into a horror movie because the details of her and their life together keep changing along with his fantasies. And I felt like the darlings were basically making that same point, like, fantasies aren't real, and so they don't bring, like, the satisfaction a real human relationship can bring.
I'll insert my left field comment now. The best thing to come out of this book was Workshop's use of the word borny, because I thought it was freaking hilarious and may add it to my vocabulary to describe things.
Yes.
That girl was just feeling borny.
And you know what? She was real for that.
I was like, you know? Every time that word popped up, I smiled a little because it was so funny.
Mm-hmm. And that's why her darlings looked the way they did.
Well, also the fact that they were bored horny and couldn't create a man with working genitalia or hands was
funny.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to ask, like, why do y'all think they don't have hands? Like, genitalia makes more sense.
Yeah, the hands, maybe because they can be used for those sorts of things too, but that's my only guess.
But they had, I'm sorry, I'm really
they
sorry.
Working mouse.
Here. Thank you. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. I knew, like, you were going to say it.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure, but that's what I would think of.
The hands part, I didn't get either. No. I mean, I thought it created a very funny mental image, but, like, yeah, the genitalia I could get, the hands, I was like, okay, and we're rolling with it.
I think to an extent it was just that, well, they didn't have working mouths. They were all, like, sliced, like, they had hair lips and skewed mouths.
That's right. They did have a really hard time getting the mouths to do anything because they couldn't talk. They could only scream, most of them.
Oh, yeah, a lot of the OG ones.
That's true.
Basically, they couldn't make their own sex dolls.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's how you know it's a female fantasy and not a male fantasy. Okay. So all of this crazy shit happens. I feel like we're at the point now where Max is on the scene. And
this is Casey has anxiety.
I have extreme anxiety. This is, like, maybe an unpopular opinion. I don't even know what would be considered an unpopular opinion in this book. I hated him so much. I was like, stop it. I'm panicking. I'm scared. Like, what are you going to happen? I didn't know if he was going to kill Samantha or Ava or all the bunnies or himself or everyone all at once.
He was Samantha.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you don't know because he's not like the other darlings. Like, he's...
No, he's Samantha if she acts on all her crazy thoughts. She's like, I already know what he's going to say. I already know how he's going to lean this direction because it's her.
Yeah. I know, but that's why it's scary because Samantha's thoughts are insane and she thinks about killing the bunnies all the time and everyone. Like, it's like, I was like, I don't know what this is going to do.
I was
it's
okay.
True. Page one, she's like, I thought about biting cupcake.
Yeah. Cannibalism. Woo. But yeah,
I don't know. I thought it was her way of unleashing herself on them finally. And I kind of liked Max. He was, yes, unpredictable and chaotic, but he was Samantha.
Because, okay, so I agree. But my argument for the fact that she was not totally in control of him is all the weird, like, sex stuff he had them do. And he has sex with Ava, and Samantha is, like, actually really uncomfortable with their relationship.
I don't think Samantha was straight.
No, I don't think so either. I think she kind of realizes that at the end, that she was, like, in love with Ava.
So I don't actually think it's that weird. I think she is pretty fluid in her desires.
But he does all that stuff with the bunnies.
I don't know. I don't actually.
I guess that does.
Well, and they were so obsessed with having sex with these darlings that that's a great way to punish them.
Wait, I don't think that's true. He says he doesn't have sex with any of them. He just uses them. Where I don't think Max has sex with any of
them. No, he bit the one girl's legs. I think that's as far as it gets.
And then had him sent nudes. That's
I think part of the reason they're tortured is because he won't have sex with them.
Okay.
It's kind of like they kind of are fascinated with Samantha because they can't pin her down. It's the same kind of thing.
That's true. And if, you know, she's not straight, then maybe she does have some, like, weird, like, suppressed attraction to them, which would actually, to me at least, make Max make a lot more sense. All right, I'm satisfied. Thanks, Caitlin.
I don't think we can give a solid answer. I mean, maybe the author can, but I think it's up to interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think Samantha's straight, to be honest. I think she just is...
Okay, queen.
Like, I think she's just obsessed with people. And, like, she sees these things in Ava and the bunnies that she wants to be, but she can't be. And I think that's what the obsession comes from. But that still doesn't really answer the Max question. I just feel like it's that common, like, there's that like common like queer woman thing where it's like, do I have a crush on my friend or do I want to be my friend? And I think that is where Samantha falls, but I think she just wants to be them. I don't think she has a crush on them.
I don't know.
I'm not sure Samantha knows what she wants.
Yeah. She was being pretty erotic in her thoughts about Ava. So
I feel
the tango thing with Diego that gets me.
That's true. I
wonder if she's just pretty fluid.
Yeah. I think I like your comments, Sarah, but I think the scene where Samantha kind of realizes that she made up Ava, she goes through heartbreak, I would personally argue, which obviously you can experience heartbreak with the loss of a friend as well. But I really felt like she realized that she had like deep love for Ava. Okay, so now we get to the ending. My favorite part of the ending is when we realize that Ava's house, which is like this safe haven in the book, was also made up. For me, that was like the key part of the twist that I was just like, I love this so much, because I didn't know what was going to happen with Ava. But like once I did understand, I wasn't like super surprised. Like I felt like all the pieces had been laid. But with the house, I was truly shocked. And maybe I shouldn't have been. And that was naive of me at that point in the novel. But I was like, I really liked it. So what did you guys think?
Okay. I have a question before we enter the discussion on the end.
Okay.
Are we all operating on the assumption that the cultish side of the bunnies creating the darlings and then creating Max is real in this book? Because they have physical injuries from the stag. Is that what I should be operating on?
That's what I'm operating on, but I think you can argue different if you want.
I don't know how to discuss the end without being told what I'm supposed to be thinking.
Okay, yeah. Well then we're going to go with me and Sarah's interpretation, and we're going to say the darlings and the injuries and all of that stuff is real. It's Samantha's interpretation of like the social elements that are like very unreliable.
So Max has the same delusion of Ava's house?
I don't know that Max cared what Ava's house was really like or not. Like, I don't know. Why does that matter to you, I guess? Like, what would that change?
I guess, are we assuming that she has actually decorated this abandoned house? But then it talks about her sleeping bag. I don't know, because just some of the scenes where it's the three of them, I find it really hard, which I know is kind of the point, to separate what is fake or fact. I have a hard time separating everything and even having a thought on the house without knowing what parts I'm thinking are real or delusion. bad word vomit. I'm sorry.
No. I guess I would say I felt like Max would have interpreted and seen the world the same way Ava did. So like if Ava believed that like the house looked a certain way, I would assume that like Max also would. But also it seemed like Max was so in love with Ava, I kind of assumed his only like real motivator was to like protect and be with Ava.
It's kind of what you said, Sarah, at the beginning. Like, it's hard to actually discuss the book without discussing what mental state you think Samantha is in.
Yeah.
Well, any comments on the ending, Sarah?
I don't know. I feel like I'm a little far away from the book. Like, I read it a little too long ago. But I feel like the ending in particular, I just was, like, riding the wave. I was, like, whatever she tells me, I believe. But it did feel like, and again, I think the biggest mystery of this novel to me was like, is Ava real? Because I feel like the whole thing of like her house disappear, like not being what it was, or like what it said it was just is like more evidence for the fact that Ava was never even real in the first place.
But I think the dead swan is there. I mean, she could be hallucinating that, but.
Well, I sort of interpreted that because she talks about how everything is like stolen or like snagged from the dumpster in Ava's house. So I kind of thought maybe she just decorated this abandoned house herself.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't actually that fake, just that it was an abandoned house, not Ava's house, because Ava wasn't real.
Yeah, because she talked about some of the things she used to do with Ava was go to the tango classes, but also go dumpster diving at the university.
Yeah.
So she may have collected these things from dumpster diving with her imaginary friend.
One, like she says, there's something on Ava's wall that says something about I am so lonely. And like Ava's like, oh, I must have been there before I got there. But like, I think that Samantha is having like a physical effect on this abandoned home, whether Ava's there or not. I don't see, this is where I'm like, I don't know. This one's really.
Yeah. Also the fact that I totally forgot about this as well. The fact that Samantha can't find Ava's house for a really long time. I was like, after we realized that like Samantha's just kind of living there, I was like, was she just wandering the streets? Like, what was even happening?
I think she was dancing alone on rooftops and sitting on benches, talking to herself and wandering the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I think that is what was happening. When you look back on it and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Unless we're operating on the idea that she did manifest Ava into a darling, basically, then maybe not.
Well, I feel like that, like, it makes sense that she couldn't find Ava's house for a long time, because if Ava was real from the beginning of the book and then wasn't, you know, she would have known, like, where Ava was living up until the diner scene. And then when Ava actually left, Ava's house wouldn't have been there anymore. So I feel like Samantha was just, like, wandering looking for something that didn't exist. And then she had such, like, a horrible fever. You know, she could have just like ended up at a place and then, you know, had decided like, yes, this was Ava's. Casey, you don't look like you agree.
No, it's not that I do or don't agree. It's that I'm just like thinking about the ending now. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking
I
what
say,
I like, want to be
talking
true.
About it and being able to process it has helped me get a better grip on why people like the book.
Yeah,
it is still not for me, but at least I have learned some things and thought deeper and broadened my interpretation. Actually, I didn't even have an interpretation to begin with. Now I have one.
Yes, I have connection to dots.
When did y'all finish the book?
I finished it yesterday.
Okay, I do feel like this is a book that like you need time with to fully appreciate. Yes.
I'm not sure though that would have made a difference for me without discussing it with you guys.
Yeah, I would have wiped it from memory.
I really was like, I don't know what's happening.
But I'll say, so I loved this book immediately. I think about it all the time. It's totally my thing. And I still feel like I learned a lot about the book just talking about it with you guys, and you didn't even like it. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Sarah said in the beginning, we're gonna have a good discussion whether or not
we agree.
Okay, well, let's end on some more conjecture to add to the whole conjecture. Gosh. Which is this novel. What do you guys think ultimately happens to Samantha, like in your little fantasy world? What do you think she's up to?
Her and John are living happily ever after.
Of course, you'd go for like the happiest ending.
I don't know.
Or drugged out ever.
She's writing this book.
I honestly kind of avoided thinking about it because I feel like there's nothing that can come of Samantha that's going to be good.
Yeah.
This is the one thing I really hope it isn't, that you just mentioned, Caitlin, that she's writing this same book that we read. Because that's the most cliche ending I've ever heard of.
The whole first half, I thought it was going to be this meta thing where this was her class assignment, like her thesis.
I also really hope that's not it.
Yeah, no. That would.
But that's no. What I thought for at least the first half.
I mean,
of the book.
It's,
that's fair.
It's not. I would have hated the book if I thought that was it.
I thought more about
that. Explains a lot, doesn't it, Casey? Because that's what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, Sarah, like you, I kind of like feel like I remain in denial, and I just like satisfy myself with the explanation that, like, I think she became able to write again. I think she started to develop a backbone, so she didn't need all these weird delusions just to like stand up for herself. Do I ultimately believe Samantha's the kind of person who can like stand on her own two feet without like therapy and like probably like drug rehabilitation? No, but I choose to believe that she reclaimed her writing, and that really helped her just not be so weird and insecure and clogged up.
I feel like this book like took place not in this dimension.
It created its own reality.
It did. And I feel like we really, like, there wasn't a lot of world building that I feel like you typically would have. And like, so it's hard for me to like imagine a world outside of this book just because nothing was the way it should have been.
That's our favorite word here on the podcast.
World building.
I know.
And it might be why I didn't like the book, because I love my world building and I had zero in this book.
Okay. Well, is there anything else that you guys want to comment on at the very end? Okay.
No, just like I think it's like the last line, isn't it? Where like she's talking to Jonah and then it's like the mud responded instead of Jonah responding.
What?
What?
You don't not remember that at all.
Hold on.
Oh my goodness. That is what stuck with me the most.
Excuse me.
I don't have.
Oh my God. You're right.
Wait, can you guys read me? It's been a while for me as well.
No fucking way.
Yeah,
I read this book last year. Can you read the ending?
I watch it float away into the shivering shade. You could come with me, I say to Jonah, if you want. I lower my gaze to the mud. Sure, Samantha, says the mud. I'd love to. I think I was so done with the book. Plus, my sister called me while I was finishing the last few pages. I just didn't even catch that. And now, nope, there's no hope for this chick.
Yeah. No, None. Everything we talked about in this episode has been lost with that sentence.
You're right. I hate to say it, Sarah, I totally did not remember that. And now I'm like, never mind. This bitch did not reclaim her writing and live a happy life.
No. Oh, my God. Raccoon priest, huh? Sounds cool. Says the mud.
I just like really didn't understand that. I just didn't know if anyone else like. I feel like
I can't believe the fact that my sister called me while I was on the like last two pages made me miss that, and now I'm really angry.
We all missed that, Caitlin, except for Sarah.
Literally,
at least I had an excuse to miss it.
I didn't. I just wanted to be.
Granted, Catherine was listening on 3x speed, which you cannot humanly process a book at that speed, in my opinion. So
I second that.
Hey,
Catherine was like, I hated the writing. I was like, did you hear any of it?
I did not say I hated the writing. I said I liked the writing. It just had weird, gratuitous moments.
I agree with that.
Okay.
But now that it's all mud, I.
Nope. Yep. Gone.
That was an excellent way to end the discussion. I'm Sarah. Sorry. I'm like, thank you for pointing that out.
Yes, that is the perfect bow to put on.
You made a lot of progress for me, and you just wiped it back out.
Back to one.
Okay. Well, that's all we have for you guys. I'm not sure if we have any listeners left, but if we do, thank you for joining us on this journey. Hey, like
book recommendations.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting to. Okay, I just want to thank the crowd.
It sounded like you were saying goodbye. I was like, oh.
No. So now, if you stuck with us all the way on this journey, I assume you want book recommendations. Do you guys have any? So I do feel like my recommendation, and probably the one we would all say, is Tender as the Flesh. It doesn't bend reality as much as Bunny. And I wish I ever had a recommendation that did, but I think Tender as the Flesh fills the same type of void of like horror that is like sort of experimental.
I do have one that crossed my mind, but first I will agree with you. Also, when you search bunny online, it says people also search for tender as the flesh, the secret history. Also, boy parts and my year of rest and relaxation come up, but
I have heard of that one.
I will say, I read this book that I had to read for AP Lit, and I was stupid and didn't read the foreword of the book, so I did not. It's called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. It's a very philosophical book, less horror, but I didn't realize until the end that the narrator was schizophrenic, and it had the very similar, like, what's real, what's not real vibe to me.
Oh my gosh.
In a totally different way, like not horror, but if you need something that just kind of messes with your mind, that's a good one, but also really is a commentary on quality.
Yes, I think that's a good recommendation. I gasped because I thought of another book I want to recommend, and I can't believe I didn't think of it sooner. One that I'm going to spare you guys from, because I actually think you'd hate it even more than this.
You're done recommending books, Casey.
I'm not. We need variety on this.
After Tender as the Flesh and this.
I'm sorry. We can't read every fantasy novel. We have to read other stuff.
There has to be a large gap in between horror books. How about that?
I will agree to that. I will agree to like twice a year horror.
I'm okay with that.
Okay. The book I want to recommend, I don't know if it's fully in the horror genre, but it's, I don't know. It's like, it's weird. It's lit fiction. And it's called Night Bitch.
Oh my gosh, you talk about this all the time.
I love
this
book.
I want to read that so badly.
I love it so much. Sarah, I do think you would really like it. It's a book about motherhood. I think I have recommended it before, actually. But it's like very much like you are never really sure if you can trust the narrator. And you're not really sure what reality is happening. But a lot of weird stuff happens, but it's like good. It's like very, a lot of commentary on motherhood and like women and blah, 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 which obviously I like. So I recommend that one.
This book, one, it reminded me of The Secret History. And I feel like if people like this book, they're more likely than not going to like The Secret History, at least in some way. I know that no one on this podcast liked that book, but whatever.
I gave it a 3. Okay.
That's true. Also, another book we didn't love on this podcast, but reminded me, was A History of Wild Places.
Oh, I really thought you were about to say Final Girl Support Group.
No, that one's too campy for me. And then
I appreciate that Sarah gave a thumbs down to History of Wild Places because we all feel similar.
We all hated this.
No, yes. I read that book because of this podcast.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I'm pretty sure we told you don't read this book, so... I'm impressed you read it.
Well, I don't. I that's my mistake. I don't listen to the first part. I just like see the title and then read it. So that's on me.
Yeah. And then what was?
Sorry to everyone who lives life like you because of our podcast. I apologize.
Okay, I will give an actual recommendation of a book I actually liked. But this is, I've already said it in this podcast, Ninth House. I think it has some interesting takes on academia and. Class systems, but it's fantasy, so it's more within my wheelhouse, but I really liked it, of Leigh Bardugo, Ninth House.
And I'm gonna recommend obviously I went through a really big Stephen King phase when I was 15, which I feel like should add up to all of you. And I think his collection of short stories called Night Shift is really good. There's some really absolute terrible ones in there, but also some really good ones that are mind-bending. But if short stories aren't your thing, I think The Shining truly is one of the, I loved that novel. It was such a great book. And it is also, I don't know if y'all have seen the movie, but like the narrator slowly slips into insanity. So you kind of get that like loss of reality, which is interesting. And I also want to recommend a movie to switch things up, and that's Beau Is Afraid, which is Ari's newest movie.
I just watched it. It's fucking insane. I loved it.
It's insanity. And I think Bunny has more of a plot than that movie, but it's kind of the same.
Yes.
It's like a waking nightmare that never ends.
Yeah. So if you guys can imagine something with less plot than Bunny. And actually pass. More horror.
And also 3 hours pass. For some reason.
Yeah. It did
three
not
hours. 3 hours.
Yeah.
Even Avengers wasn't that long.
I can count on one hand the number of scary movies I've watched.
Oh, this movie is so scary in such a weird, fucked up way as well. Like, it's not like other scary movies.
I just point like out, we are different people.
Yes. It's like, it's. I feel like it's not scary. It's just like deeply upsetting.
Disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, I loved yeah, it. I wasn't scared. I was disturbed. And yeah, I also loved it.
So good.
Okay. We need to just cut off this like circle jerk we're having. Like, it's.
Sarah, we'll see you in October for spooky season.
The Shining?
Mm-mm. No. We could do a classic. We've done Jane Austen. Anyway.
There's no long, reason.
How long is The Shining?
There's absolutely it's no long. Reason why you should read The Shining.
Yeah, it's
long. Not book talk popular.
Yeah, it's definitely
that is correct. Yeah.
Bunny actually was book talk viral.
Yes.
So I will give it that. But that's the point of the podcast. Not every book that goes viral on social media is for every reader.
Yeah. And we're here to help you decide. And I'm sure you got so much information to help you decide today.
Probably learned a lot about all of us today, too. Yeah.
Okay. Well, these are just our opinions. Feel free.
Catherine
to
has it. Dissociated over there. You can't yeah. see her, but she has.
I think Catherine's ready to go to bed. She's so done.
To be fair, I start work at 5 a.m. every yes, morning.
That is also so very true.
I'm out by like 7.
Okay. Very fair. Find us. Please rate and review this podcast. Find us online at Busy Girls Pod. We love to hear from you guys. We would especially love to hear your takes on Bunny because we are sure they span the gambit. And special shout out to Sarah. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I just want to say that I, like I said multiple times, a huge fan of this podcast, and I often have conversations with y'all in my head, and it's been such an honor for them not to be in my head today.
Sounding a little Samantha-esque there. No, I'm just kidding. I push. That's very sweet, and I hope that's what everyone's doing, is having a little conversation with a little book club.
Aw. Well, with that, I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.